All right, we've got all four of us here. Nobody touch anything.
I don't. I've got a giant stuffed polar bear from the library's children's section, which I put into the Labor Day float, and now is at my house, and I'm not returning it until I, like, refur it, because its fur is, like, falling off.
Oh, dear. It was quite a sight to see this giant white bear on the back of a blue El Camino.
And anybody that's been to the library knew when I was driving around, like, that's the library's polar bear. But I made sure to drive up and down, like, Main Street, like, 10 times before I went home. I had so much fun.
What else has been happening?
When I started the podcast, I wasn't working. Then I got a job, worked that job for 2 years, and it was, like, miserable sometimes. And then finally, my last day was really September 1st.
So let me get this straight. You used to be a lawyer and now you're a mechanic or a panel beater or something.
Yes, I like weld. I learned how to put in my alternator. I just got through learning how to do a paint job. Like, I'm doing the primer. If you want to bring in a project, you can just sign up every semester, year after year, until your project's done. So there's some guys in this auto body class that have been working on their hot rods for a few years now, and they just move through the shop class. And so I'm learning from them, and I'm going to start working on my vehicle soon.
You teach me and I teach you, Gigi's girl.
Anything that's not litigating.
Got a panel beat 'em all. Let's introduce everyone. We've got Gigi, who I've just been talking to, of course. Sister Divchina is back with us.
Hello.
And returning, Brother Brandon's back with us. This is the third time he's been on the podcast. I think his Bluetooth might be off or something.
I'm like, open your car door and then close it again.
Yeah.
I'm getting bad solutions.
Gigi the mechanic says, open the car door and close it again.
Did you learn that in class?
It's like stop and start it.
All right.
Hello, he's back.
I just had to reload it.
And he's recording. Yay. Don't touch anything. So, Brother Brandon, tell us what's been happening with you lately.
I just had a major property dispute at my business with the neighbors when they bought their property. They completely failed to do any kind of due diligence. The previous owner built the building 22 feet away from our property line.
Oh, no.
We're putting in a fence right now on the property line, as we have every right to do. Now it makes their building really hard to use because they have these like bay doors to pull trucks into. And I really don't care because the guy started out threatening to sue me over this whole thing. And it's like, go ahead.
Sounds like a legal issue, Gigi.
Oh, this never ends well.
He even threatened to get a prescriptive easement. He really hated it when I said, well, that's the lawyer's word for squatter's rights.
So is this a common thing in Utah?
It's a common thing in America.
So people just living on easements when they shouldn't be.
Yeah. The previous owner was one of those militia types that didn't think the rules applied to him. Remember the Bundys in Oregon that took over that bird refuge?
Oh, I remember something about that.
The previous owner was kind of like the bankroll behind some of those guys.
Jesus Christ. Whatever happened to them? I guess they eventually gave up.
One of them got in a shootout with the police and was killed.
Fancy that.
Most of them were arrested, but they weren't convicted.
Oh.
So the guy that built the building died, his wife sold it, and the people that bought the building didn't find out where the property line was. And then they ducked me for a month while I was trying to get a hold of them. And so we just started building the fence, and then they freaked out and threatened to sue. And
well, Jesus.
We have a scheduled meetup with them next week.
Well, good luck with that.
One of you is going to have to move.
Are you good with negotiations, Brandon? Are you chatty?
I'm really good with it, but I'm also holding all the cards. So I have every intention to tell them to go pound sand.
That's so right. And if they don't like it, just bring a Book of Mormon with you and you can tell them to stick that up their ass.
I'll stick a fence post up there.
Yeah.
Are the Mormons still fighting over whether or not they can build a temple with a high enough spire in like McKinley, Texas or wherever? They're fighting with their neighbors over property rights.
It's called the McKinney Temple, but it's actually going to be in Fairview, or that's what they want it. And then the Mormon church was trying to get everybody to go and say, oh, the temple is an essential part of our worship.
They're trying to rally local government.
Right. I think that was the one where there was a woman who was crying because she didn't have the high enough steeple, so it really literally destroyed her wedding day with her husband.
Oh, such a destroying.
Can you imagine?
Never mind that half the temples don't have steeples.
Exactly.
The fellow was thinking, oh, I was just hoping to destroy you in the bedroom later. But no, the woman's there just focusing on the steeple. Oh, the steeple.
It says something about her husband if she's so worried about the steeple on her wedding night, you know. And then Nemo the Mormon, he's a podcaster out in the UK, talked about that there's many temples that don't have steeples and it's the ordinances that's important and all that.
That's right. It's not the size of the steeple that counts, it's the ordinances, isn't it?
Exactly. And so now Nemo is going through excommunication, I heard, from the LDS Church. But in Fairview, they say, we'd love to have your temple. Just do it where it's zoned to do it.
That's right.
Well, two people who put in a lawsuit under, what is it called, RLUIPA, some federal law that allows non-discrimination in religious buildings.
Dua Lipa?
These two people said, well, if they went to the Fairview Temple, it would be like a certain number of miles, but they have to drive all the way to Dallas, which is like 17 miles further.
17 miles?
And that is such a hardship for them to practice their faith.
Wow, what a hardship.
Therefore, they're being discriminated against.
17 miles in Brisbane is like traveling to the other side of the city and back. I mean,
right?
What the fuck?
You have to remember they have infinite money for litigation.
Exactly.
It doesn't matter to them. Like, they know that they can hire enough attorneys to figure out what the rule is, to file a variance so they can get an exception and file whatever.
They have their old law firm.
Yeah,
that's Curtin right.
McConkey, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's what they do is they'll threaten. They'll say, we'll bury you forever.
They need to have the appearance of having these beautiful temples because they're so into the appearances. And this was recently a big subject on TikTok because of the Secret Lives of Mormon Wives.
All getting plastic surgery.
If you look at the prophets or people back in the day, they were like, ladies, if you can't find a husband, like, do everything in your power to make yourself pretty. That is like a prophet telling women these things.
Divjina, I just wanted to confirm, was the reason Nemo is being excommunicated that he said the steeples weren't important?
Now, why now?
That is the grand mystery. He also said he couldn't sustain the leadership of the church because he had proof of Oakes's lies. In fact, I think Oakes responded to him, telling him that he did an investigation on himself.
He did an investigation on himself.
That he did not know about electroshock treatment going on at BYU when he was president there, which has been dispelled many a time. So the thing is, nobody knows why now.
I mean, I'm surprised it didn't happen before.
When you rip out a man's tongue, you're not telling everybody that he's lying. You're telling everybody that you fear what he's saying.
Right.
Yeah.
His excommunication, they're not going to allow a high council. I don't know what that means.
The state high council is like the Order of the 12 Apostles at the state level. Not the local congregation, but the next step up.
What's the reason that the church is giving for excommunicating him? Because he has said a lot of stuff against the church, right?
They're saying apostasy, which, you know, is kind of the blanket term for they disagree.
Because he's essentially ex-Mormon or post-Mormon, isn't he?
More or less.
He's like a Mormon critic, but he's still in the church.
He's a Mormon critic, but he really is proud of his church membership. I was watching him talk with RFM, and he's devastated because I think he had the illusion that he could change the church.
No.
My brother had that illusion for a minute.
Yeah.
But still be a temple recommended Mormon. And I think the church doesn't allow that.
No, they can't.
We thought for a while they were trying to progress a bit, but I think that particularly now that Nelson has become kind of a figurehead, well, he's been a figurehead for a while.
It feels like they're getting a little regressive.
Yeah.
Oakes cannot tolerate dissent and never has. And now that he's coming into his own power, is this going to be like if Boy K. Packer would have been president? Just think about what kind of a repressive regime that would have been. You know what Oakes did professionally before he became an apostle, right?
Tell me, what did he do?
Supreme Court of Utah.
Really?
Yeah, he was a lawyer and then judge. Yeah.
So he's a litigious motherfucker.
He's coming from a very, very significant place of authority.
Yes.
Oh, so much authority.
I mean, I can see him being more, I don't want to say totalitarian in his views, but I mean, he sat on a bench for that long.
Oh, yeah.
Come on.
He thinks the sun shines out of his eyes.
Well, Brandon, maybe you can chime in on this new transgender statement that the church put out.
Yeah.
Tell me what it said, because I didn't actually read it, and tell me the implications.
The big thing is they can't use the restroom of their choice. A member of the bishopric would go in and announce that they're coming in and like stand guard outside while they do their business.
Oh, Jesus.
They can't do any youth work. They can't do any overnight stuff with anybody. It's just codified that they're second-class citizens in the church, that they are not really welcome.
There is nothing happening in the bathrooms with a bunch of transgender people. Really, what's happening is kids are getting molested in the bishop's office.
Wrong room, guys. Wrong room.
Yeah.
Curtin McConkie, the church's law firm, they show up with their non-disclosure agreements when somebody is sexually assaulted by a member of the clergy and make sure it gets buried.
Mm-hmm. What really needed to happen is all those children who had to go into those interviews where the bishop would question you about your sexuality and your masturbation practices, that's where they should have had levels of protection.
Yeah, and still don't.
But instead, they're chasing boogeymen.
It has made my mother, who I never thought would ever question, actually question it. So my daughter's best friend is transgender. Her name is Lila. She's become a really good friend of the family. Like, she comes to Christmas and Thanksgiving with us now. And my mom loves Violet. And Violet is like one of those fiercely hanging on, trying to be Mormon, believes it, checks all of the boxes, except she's transgender. And, you know, there it is.
And now every time she goes to one of the state dances, are they going to have a bishop as escort her to the boys' bathroom because they're like, your birth certificate says you're not a girl. And then they have to open up the door and yell inside, everybody get out. There's a boy dressed like a girl coming in now who wants to use the toilet.
What I want to know is, what if they can't tell? Let's just say she was new to a stake riot, passed really well, and didn't tell. What's the church going to do about that?
They would never know. How has it been going on all these years? Wait, are you telling me we've never had transgender people pass in our church before?
Right.
And there's been transgender people who've talked about the fact that they've been very welcome in their ward. They've used the bathrooms for years just fine.
And now it's an issue.
They say, what do I do? Maybe you can go home to go? Maybe you can leave? Yes, says you're not welcome at all. Like, we don't want you as part of this.
Yeah.
So their biggest fear is they can't say trans people, you're not welcome at all. But let's make it as difficult for you to be a part of our community as possible so that nobody gets to meet you and learn about you and care about you and see your humanity. Now, I'll take a step back, though, and I'm just really thinking, putting together all this plastic surgery and all this obsession with the size of the steeple, I think we might have a confluence here. I think we have a business idea. We'll have to have some endowment plastic surgery businesses in Utah.
Ooh. Oh, my gosh. You could open up a plastic surgery center called Celestial Endowment.
Celestial Endowment.
Like, think Celestial, ladies. Think. Double D.
For time and eternity.
They'll bleach your asshole so that you'll never see outer darkness. When I was a child, they tell you your body is your temple and not to mess with it. Don't get tattoos. Even piercings were like, not until you're a certain age.
And then only get one.
One piercing. I mean, I pierced my ear second time and my mom was like, take that out. And I did it myself, right?
I got bored on my mission and tried piercing my belly button.
Oh, that's a hard one to do.
Yeah, it didn't work very well. And
ouch.
It didn't work.
No, you need a freaking gauge to do that.
I found that style. Yes, I still have a scar.
Is it just the women that are feeling this pressure? Are the men still walking around fugly as ever?
Oh.
That's usually how it works. Yes, JJ.
I was just talking to my friend who I went to grad school with, who's a professor at BYU. And he teaches folklore, which he has to walk this tightrope of the difference between Mormon folk beliefs and actual, like, theology.
Oh.
And his podcast is pretty interesting, called Angels and Seer Stones. And him and his wife do it. He did an episode about the death canes of Joseph Smith. The planks that they brought his bleeding dead body back to Nauvoo on, they've made 12 canes out of those planks.
Yikes.
And some of the prominent families ended up with one of these canes. And some of them have ascribed like mystical healing powers to them and stuff.
This is like a walking cane?
So there were planks, you know, just on the wagon that brought his body back.
Sure. And they're like, these are now sacred because they touched his dead body.
Yeah. I've seen a couple of models in the church's museum in Salt Lake City. They're rare. There was only like 12 made. We got like gloss of his hair and put it under glass on each cane.
Jesus.
It's like how many churches in England have a piece of the one true cross? The one true cross of Jesus has been split up so many times and put into so many different churches that it was the biggest goddamn crucifixion on the planet.
It's a forest.
Has anybody been watching this show, The Secret Lives of the Mormon Wives?
I watched 5 minutes and I just couldn't.
I can't.
It is mindless, inane bullshit.
All I've gathered from my secondhand absorption of this is that all the women look the same.
And they all look fugly.
They're living a very superficial life.
And then they started swinging.
Okay, so this isn't really the secret lives of Mormon wives. This is the secret lives of people who live in Utah that at one point or another were practicing Mormons and are no longer.
Right.
It's just like the Real Housewives of Salt Lake City.
The Real Housewives that are yet to be excommunicated.
Yeah, they will.
When I try to watch it, I can feel the brain cells dying.
Yeah.
Oh.
I'm in a place where there aren't many Mormons at all.
Oh, that must be wonderful.
And I was asked about this at the dog park. She's like, do they all get married so young? It's like everybody on the show got married really young, and then they all started swinging, and then they had feelings, and then they all divorced each other.
But I mean, think about it, though. That is a normal behavior of a human sexual life arc, right? And there's a certain point when you're young and your hormones are at their peak.
Yeah.
But if your church is telling you, you cannot engage in this activity outside of these certain rules, you are going to jump into that box because your biology is telling you to get laid.
And that lasts for a few years. And then, of course, biology says you want something different.
Well, especially if you've got kids in the mix, because now the wife is feeling that her husband doesn't appreciate her. He's exhausted by the child rearing. People go through these ebbs and flows. But if you married somebody only because you really wanted to get laid and you got along in that respect, but you really didn't talk about what is the egalitarian way we're going to raise children?
Mm-hmm.
How are we going to survive this marriage at 50, at the age of 70, as skin starts to wrinkle and the boob jobs don't keep it up anymore? Like,
get better boob jobs.
Yeah, get more plastic surgery or get a new husband or get a new wife. Like,
just going to swap this whole body out one day, Gigi.
I asked Brad the other day, if we could take a pill and it meant we would unage, like let's say we went back to the age of 20.
That'll happen soon, by the way.
I said, would you want to have kids? Like,
hell no.
I kind of think we've came to that decision, right? Because it was like, how exhausting is that job?
Now, Brendan, your brother, I think he said he's being excommunicated or maybe he's leaving. Tell me what happened there and what was the impetus for that?
Okay, so my brother's dead.
Right.
And he got married to a man and they were going to their ward and they understood that they couldn't hold collies and stuff like that. But they just wanted to go and be part of the ward, have fellowship, go to worship service. And the local bishop was great with that. The first state president that they had was great with it too.
Mm-hmm.
But here's time came up, they called a new state president. And that guy was a complete closet case.
Oh, okay. Anti it because they have their internalized homophobia or something.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure this guy just wishes that he could like marry a man. So instead, he decided that he was going to go after them and have them excommunicated for having sex with each other as a married couple because their marriage didn't really exist in the eyes of the church.
Right.
They only were civilly married and the church doesn't recognize gay marriage.
So I guess they weren't married in the church itself.
No, they were married in their backyard.
Oh, that's wonderful.
I was the best man.
Oh,
it was great. Except that it was in like July and it was like 103 degrees.
Oh, okay. Is that hot or cold?
Like 40.
Oh, 40. That is hot. That's Australian temperatures.
Anyway, the state president's supposed to excommunicate them. They sort of fight back. My brother-in-law's family is really well-connected. Personal friends with Jeff Farrahan.
Wow.
Also good friends with Tom Christofferson, who is the gay brother of Pod Christofferson, the apostle.
So the apostle has a gay brother.
Oh, yeah. Pod Christofferson has a gay brother. They hang out with Tom sometimes.
That's amazing.
But anyway, the state president, I think, got some called and just backed off of excommunicating them. Since then, my brother hasn't really been to church, but with the transgender rule that just came out, he finally resigned.
I'm sorry.
Well, that's going to be a bit of a culture shift for him, isn't it? He's not going to be, I guess, associating as much with his Mormon friends. I guess if you can't go to service or something.
Well, I mean, that started years ago. He'd been married like 5 years now.
Yeah. Do you think it's just been a gradual thing, just walking away?
They basically stepped away anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, we drink coffee together in the morning because we work together.
So they're just crossing the T's and dotting the I's.
Yeah, he finally just went through with it and resigned.
So is your dad leaving the church as well?
My dad will never leave.
Wow.
He doesn't doubt it. He thinks I'm going through some phase, which, you know, 20 years later.
Wow.
But he accepts your brother.
Yes. I mean, it's taken time. When they got married, my parents actually went to the wedding, which was cool, but they looked like they were at a funeral.
What an interesting conflict for your dad, though. Fully believing the Mormonism, but also fully accepting his son. I mean, his brain must be trying to explode most of the time.
I don't get it. Whatever. Me and my dad don't have the greatest of relationships.
And you're the son that's in apostasy, not your brother. That's weird.
They think that I kind of let him into it too, so.
Well, thank you, Brother Brandon.
Yep.
For leading him into it.
I am a heretic. They can burn me at the stake now.
Right.
All right. Did anyone want to talk about the politics that's happening in your country right now? We've had Donald Trump. He's had a second attempt on his life. We've had a debate. I hope we're going to have another debate because it's just such good watching. You start eating dogs and you never know what's going to happen.
I think that there's a certain amount of Mormons going full Trump.
Oh, yeah.
100% gun-toting, off-the-rails, right-wing, white supremacist faction of the Mormon Church, which is weird to me because that's not the kind of church I experienced in San Diego, but it's, I think, what you find in the Utah area.
It's definitely the church I experienced in Utah, and even worse if you go up into, like, southern Idaho.
Really?
Yeah. It's really strange. But you do have some people who are starting to get really sick of Donald Trump, and these are more devout, the more sincere ones who don't like adultery, who do not like the lying.
Trump, it's a cult of personality. So I think for a lot of people in the LDS church, this hierarchy feels something more comfortable to them than perhaps something that is less structured than that.
Kind of primed for it. That's really interesting, Divchena.
Yeah, there was a lot of people where they said things like, well, you know, he's not the perfect man, but he's here to deliver the perfect message, or he's here to deliver God's will. And then they would compare him to certain prophets in the Book of Mormon.
They like Trump because they think that he's going to kick off all the events of the apocalypse.
Which is so terrifying.
They will not say that part out loud, but trust what they're thinking.
You're right.
I think there's a huge part of the population seeing assassination attempts as he is being saved by God.
Yeah.
These are all blessings upon him.
God's hand is intervening.
I don't think it's a grim part of the population, but it's a very vocal part.
And it will motivate some people to get out and vote who may not have voted.
They're within earshot, you could say.
Earshot.
Divchena, I think you might be living in a swing state, is that right?
Oh, yeah.
So what's the climate like there? Because your vote actually matters.
Mine doesn't.
Please register.
Oh, I'm registered. I have my absentee ordered.
Yay.
It is so polarized. Kamala Harris was practicing her debates. She took a break and went to a spice store called Penzi's Spices. Fantastic spices. Started in a suburb of Milwaukee by his parents, but run by a gentleman named Bill Penzi. It's now in 20 states.
Ooh.
Anyway, he's very concerned about Trump. He has a part of his spice website that says for Republicans, you know, trying to reason with Republicans or offend them, depending on your point of view. But to say, why do you support Trump when he's done all this? So then Trump comes out. I bet he doesn't know what Penzi's is, but he just made some mention about how rotten those spices are. And now Penzi's have a half price on all their orange spices.
Nice. They're like, get them out the door.
Get your chair, Mike.
All the ginger.
Well, let's talk about something else horrific.
Okay.
And that's the 25th episode of the Saints podcast. That's all about Joseph Smith and his shenanigans. And we call this Roasting Saints. And I'm going to call it Re-Roasting Saints because we tried to record this a couple of weeks ago and it fucked up. This is our second attempt. And so far, I think it's gone pretty well. We left Joseph last time in custody. And they start the podcast saying that he was freed, which I think is a bit odd because he wasn't technically freed.
Yeah, they just kind of let him go.
Right.
I think the sheriff was sick of babysitting him. And this is what happens after he gets out of custody. I'm going to play the first clip and then you're all free to chime on in.
So when the Saints left Missouri, They were sick and cold and had lost most of their possessions, and the kind citizens of Quincy had welcomed them into their city. And they stayed there for quite a while and finally realized that they needed to build their own. And there was some discussion as to whether that should be one big settlement or it should be spread out again.
Really some concern even. If we get together, we're just going to be in another mess.
So they found this land that seemed to be in a really great location. Commerce, Illinois, was on the Mississippi River. They had access again to the water transportation. One of the problems, though, was that this particular area was in a very boggy, marshy place. And so there was a lot of mosquitoes and malaria, sickness and death.
I mean, I guess God didn't think about the mosquitoes. I mean, can you bless malaria away with an anointing and a laying on of hands?
They tried.
They tried, yes.
That sounds miserable.
But the land was cheap.
Right, that's the real reason.
And once you drain the swamp, it really wasn't that bad a land.
I'm trying to fact check malaria in Illinois, because Nauvoo is kind of further north. We know that the Mississippi froze over winter, because that's how they got across from it.
Yeah.
I'm just curious how much malaria was happening in Nauvoo at that period of time.
If it wasn't malaria, they must have been getting sick from something.
I mean, there's enough mosquito-borne illnesses that it may not be actually malaria, but it might be something similar.
Well, it could be things that weren't even mosquito-borne, too. Just like other types of ticks or bugs or...
Or just Joseph Smith.
Or Joseph Smith.
Just his presence making people ill.
1850s, you know, sleeping with everybody's wife.
You know, it does make me wonder, what was the STD rate?
Maybe they were dying of STDs.
I mean, there's got to be like some gonorrhea running around the old pioneer or something.
I wonder how many of the apostles had syphilis and were just insane.
Joseph Smith must have had something. I mean, wouldn't that affect anybody's view of their prophet if it was shown somehow that he was like just riddled with like sex diseases?
Maybe that's why he didn't have kids with anyone else except Emma. Maybe he just wasn't that virile.
Well, that was because John C. Bennett was an abortionist.
Right.
That's the theory anyway. We're not real sure.
I don't want to say that Mormonism is a sex cult because...
It is a sex cult.
It's more than that.
But there is an element to it that you cannot deny is like very wrapped up with and obsessed by the virginity, the whole idea of women being mothers, having sex.
Steeples.
Yes, they're obsessed with steeple size and it translates into boob size. But the Mormons will not ever admit that there's any aspect of a sexual cult deviancy nature that this church was based on.
They need to change one of those death canes into a dildo. Okay, so I've already touched on this next clip. I've titled this one, as usual, Joseph provides help that is intangible.
Joseph and Emma found that most of their time was spent initially in going around and blessing and helping encourage people to get better and to build the city. And also at the same time, Joseph was calling members of his apostles to go on missions.
That's right. Send all the men away on missions so that only his penis is the one around.
Then marry their wives.
It's like a giant pyramid scheme, though. He's like, you need to go out and recruit more people.
Why do you think that that is like the business model of Mormons?
Yeah, every business model I know.
There's a reason why all of these pyramid schemes exist in Utah. The church is the inspiration.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I know.
And I find a parallel, too, between this term, I think she said, encouraging people to get better.
Yeah.
That phrase reminds me of when somebody's down on their luck and they go to Bishop's Warehouse and then the bishop encourages them to be self-sufficient, meaning shaming and things like that. Like, I'm sorry, encouraging somebody to get better, what does that mean? To me, that sounds like a very rude and unkind approach. Gigi, get better. Just get better.
Just get better.
Oh, I encourage you. If you just do this, you'll get better. If you just repent, you'll get better.
You are at fault if you don't have faith. It's like, heal thyself. They believe that through faith, they can manifest healing through their hands, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're not healing, then it's either their faith or yours.
Exactly.
On Reddit, somebody was pointing out all these quotes by the different prophets and different members of the church telling women, make yourself pretty. Not all of us are born with this aesthetic of the Mormon blonde, whatever it is that they did over there with their genetic cleansing in Utah.
It's boring, whatever it is. I prefer brunettes.
There's a reason.
Oh, it's genetics.
When you get to the succession crisis and the transfiguration of Brigham Young and all that.
Oh, that's right.
They just have barely received a bunch of converts from the Scandinavian countries. And most of those people decided to press on with Brigham Young and go west. Meanwhile, the older, especially English descent saints stayed with people that ended up being the RLDS and Community of Christ.
This is why Mormons have a certain look.
That's why there's so many Hansons, Swensons,
Jensen.
Christensen's in Utah.
Meet Mormon Jensen. Dun,
dun, and that dun, is what took dun, over dun, a lot dun, of Mormon dun, land.
I don't know if they were doing it on purpose.
Yeah, I don't think it was on purpose.
They maybe not on purpose, but kind of. Because let's talk about the curse of Cain.
Yeah, yeah. They didn't introduce any black people into that genetic mix.
Right.
So maybe as a young Mormon, you're being taught subconsciously that the whiter the skin, the more righteous the individual. Or consciously, because we've heard that too.
Well, and also where they had a lot of missionary success.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
In Europe, you have the revolution of 1848, all sorts of turmoil. And so the Danes, especially, I mean, they lost almost half their country that was now even modern Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the Wars of Bismarck, the Wars of German Unification. So that's when this is happening.
So we're getting a lot of refugees. At the same time, we have the Great Reformation for churches.
The Second Great Awakening.
Yes. This is how Utah came to be blonde and blue-eyed. And this is the culmination of all those years, is the Secret Lives of Mormon Wives.
There we go.
Which is like really telling you something about humanity. Like, we are not going to survive long. Like, AI is going to destroy us all, and we're not going to know how to grow food anymore. It's going to happen in 50 years.
The next clip I've called, We Know the Bible Better Today, and it's horseshit.
These people, both in Great Britain and in America, were very well versed in the Bible, and they knew the Bible, probably much better than we know it today. So they were waiting for this. They knew the promises. They knew the way that the church had been organized by Jesus Christ and his apostles, and they knew that that church could and would be restored on the earth.
They knew their Bible better back then than what we do now?
No.
Nah.
No.
They knew their King James Bible better.
That's exactly right.
But I don't think they even knew that one better because they didn't have ample access to it.
Well, on the frontier, the only reading material a lot of people had was the Bible.
Yeah, that was your entertainment.
Doesn't mean they know it, though.
Mm-mm.
They read it because it's the only thing you could read.
Yeah, I mean, they'll know the stories in it.
They didn't have to go into detail.
Yeah.
They didn't have all these other sources to discern what it meant.
We also have better translations.
And we can access them instantly at like BibleGateway.com. I just think we have a much better idea about the Bible than what they did. And they're trying to say, oh, these people were taking it straight up because they knew that Smitty's message was awesome. No, they didn't. They were just being conned like every other bloody person. Joseph went to Washington, D.C. to try and get some cash. It was like, Mr. President, may I have some cash?
The main purpose of their trip to Washington, D.C. was to seek redress, contributions to make up for what the saints had lost in Missouri. So they went in to visit with President Martin Van Buren and was shot down.
What the
hell? Yes, can we have redress for all of the horrible things we did in Missouri? I mean, sure, a few bad things happened to us too, some horrible things, but can we have some redress for this war that we essentially started?
They're like, they wanted money from the Victims Compensation Fund.
Right.
He got rebuffed, came back, and created the School of the Prophets, which, if you know what that was, they were trying to become a government for when Jesus came back.
Yeah, it's like he got ideas while he was in Washington. It's like, oh, I like the sound of this being president. Oh, I think I might do that myself.
Well, he did run for president also.
I have two comments. Number one, the arrogance.
I know, right?
Of Joseph Smith, which I think, though, continues with a lot of the leadership of the LDS Church. Number two, I'm learning more about Tim Ballard in OUR for for some people, they were setting it up to be president of the United States, running in Mitt Romney's seat.
Really?
They were also setting him up to play into leadership and eventually become prophet of the LDS Church. So he would have the dual role of the prophet of the LDS Church and the president of the United States.
Well, that really died, didn't it?
And he had a whole following of people in Utah for him to gain power.
Holy shit.
And that plays into so many of the not really widely known prophecies. The White Horse prophecy, of course, the Constitution would dangle by a thread and they'd come running in like on a white horse.
Oh, Silva!
To save the country. Even worse, Joseph Smith prophesied that there would be somebody that would follow him called the One Mighty and Strong who would be able to do what he wants and able to do.
I remember this.
All I see is old guys in the Quorum of the Twelve. They're not mighty and strong.
That's why all these polygamists claim it doesn't matter when they get excommunicated, because they're the One Mighty Strong.
Oh.
And so they're the ones that are the real leadership.
Yeah, and Sister Patience, you haven't seen their steeples.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a selling point.
Oh, so straight and tall.
There's a whole Wikipedia page dedicated to the One Mighty and Strong.
Oh, really?
1832 prophecy by Joseph Smith. It would set in order the house of God and arrange for the inheritances of the Latter-day Saints. What is the natural progression of these beliefs?
Insanity?
That the Mormon Church should be in charge of America. Like, they have the Bible of America, right? The Book of Mormon. This tells the story of the people that were here first.
That's kind of like the Book of America that he was writing, isn't it?
It really was.
I mean, they did decide that Eden started here.
Independence, Missouri.
So what is the natural progression of the Mormon faith? To take over the White House, to run the land.
To build a theocracy that is the destiny of the Americas.
So when Jesus comes back, they can run around in all the temples?
But you know, that natural progression is a very important phrase, because that gives clarity why each prophet can contradict the last one and they can keep coming up with new bullshit, because they can just say it's progression.
That's right.
So God doesn't have to have a single voice.
I don't know how you can really separate the religion from the politics to some extent, but it gets to be this extreme. You're hearing words from Donald Trump now talk about eradicating certain people from the land. They're below the animal. They're not even human anymore. They're eating your pets. This is the kind of words from propaganda coming out of the 1940s. It's not that much different than the words you see in the Book of Mormon when they talk about the Mark of Cain.
It's horrific. Remember that chapter we read, GJ, recently, where like three or four times he doubled down on the whole black is the bad.
Yeah.
He just kept digging the hole for himself.
Yeah.
And here you've got apologists out here
saying that's not what it means.
Saying, oh no, it doesn't say that.
Words matter because they are the precursor to action. And so when people become normalized to the idea of you're reading the Book of Mormon and there's violence against certain people who are not worthy of God's love, we've now brought the idea that in some ways it's okay to normalize violence against groups of people.
I wonder if he was orange.
I mean, no, he was white and delightsome.
Yes.
Oh, right.
Oh, how delightsome.
They didn't have spray tan back in the 1840s.
Well, thank you so much for having this wonderful orange and delightsome chat today.
Oh, real quick though, Patience, are you alive in a home that is not flooded?
Yes.
Where are you? Like, you look alive.
Yes.
What's happening?
So I'm currently actually in a crisis home.
Oh my.
It is a lovely apartment, but it's been provided by Anglicare, which is a charity of the Church of England.
Oh, wow.
And the reason I'm in a crisis home is because I live in a building and most of the building was flooded by someone going up to nearly the top and opening a fire hydrant.
That I cannot believe it. Have they caught the person?
Yes, they know who it is. They have caught them.
I mean, the person probably doesn't have the assets to fix any of the damages that they've caused.
Oh, no. Insurance is covering it.
I'm assuming Australian insurance companies are just as bad as American, and they do everything they can to not pay for things.
You got it. So because insurance has been tardy and we were unable to go back to our apartments, it was deemed uninhabitable.
Like for the whole building?
Most of the building, except the two top floors.
How many people was that, do you think?
Hundreds.
Wow.
Oh my gosh. I mean, it's flooding, so you lost a lot of your belongings.
Some of our belongings were damaged, but as long as it was off the floor, you were pretty right.
Okay.
But I can imagine because the walls are saturated, like I've done work There's on mold, cases like this. Yeah.
And they won't turn the electricity back on until it's all fixed.
Right.
So we were evacuated. They won't let us stay there. And because I owned my unit, it's not like, okay, well, you've breached your rent agreement with me, I'll go and rent elsewhere. It wasn't like that. And I was in between jobs at the time. I was thinking, oh, I might just coast for a bit and then I'll get a job in a month or two. And it all just happened at a really bad time.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, I've got a job now. I start on Monday and I'll be able to rent a place shortly. I saw just yesterday the insurance company has finally said, we're ready to take claims. Dude, you've made so many people homeless. I needed this weeks ago.
Right.
Anglicare finally were the people that stepped up and said, okay, the insurance company isn't helping you. Because I was in hotels before that.
Oh, my God.
But I just ran out of money.
Is the Anglicare treating you well?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good.
They just let us have the apartment until mid next month. So it's a nice apartment.
I always tell people insurance companies don't make money by paying out the money.
Well, exactly.
What the insurance company has done is they calculated how much they're going to end up possibly paying out, and they move that into an interest-bearing account. And the longer they don't actually pay you, at least in America, they're not taxed on it because it's a liability, not an asset.
100%.
Never mind that they're actually making interest on it.
They're making money on my homelessness.
Oh, yeah. They know how to make money every which way from up and down.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm glad that you are safe. I was worried about you.
I was worried for a while. While too.
Yeah.
I've had some bad days.
Jeez. My God. And who is this fuck that did this?
The resident of the building.
Oh, wow.
And apparently, according to the CCTV footage, he looked like he was on something.
I just had to inquire one of my employees for that.
I mean, I could see this being Gigi in another life getting drunk and pulling a fire core. I don't know. Like, but for the grace of God, do I? I don't know.
Like, I don't want the guy to be locked away forever, but there needs to be some sort of justice. You can't just do that to people. Making people homeless is not cool.
Yeah, that's a lot of people for that to happen in a high rise.
Yeah.
Damn. I'm wishing you luck on your new job.
Oh, yes. Thank you so much.
Good luck.
Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye.